giant of limitless power at man's command. And where was it science found that giant? In the atom, a particle so infinitely small that it takes over 100 billion atoms to make up the head of a pin.
This is Out of the Basement, a podcast dedicated to radiation medicine.
This is Dr. Jason Bechta, shivering at you from the now winterized Vermont mountain basements, here to talk with you, at you, about a palate cleanser episode. I feel like everything I've done over the past 6 to 12 months has been very dense and heavy, which was not the point of what I wanted to be doing with this stuff. I mostly want to be talking about low-dose radiotherapy for degenerative inflammatory diseases, which we'll get there eventually. But in the meantime, I feel like in talking to people who aren't me, people who aren't in my particular bubble, as it were, I don't know if I am communicating my worldview adequately or if people are hearing me the way I want to be heard, meaning I am obviously vocally very critical of many things. I am still deeply optimistic about radiation oncology or radiation medicine in general, which seems incompatible. It seems paradoxical, yet there's still a lot of reason for hope and excitement. I don't know if I'm going to be able to pull this one off. This is going to be pretty crazy, but it's never stopped me before. And then to throw a monkey wrench into my plans here, the ERAS, ARAS, how do you say that word? I always used to say ERAS, but I think I'm wrong. I don't know. The prelim match data came out. And I can't not talk about that, but I'm annoyed. Because really, what is the point of that data? Can anyone explain that to me? Is it whenever in real life, whenever I do anything, certainly as a doctor, but anything, if I do something, I ask, how is this going to change management? What am I going to do with this information? What is the point? And I totally get and love the finalized data of the match. I think that's very important. But what is the point of this? And full disclosure, I've never tried to go figure it out. Maybe I could, but are program directors doing something with this information? Are programs, is somebody doing something with this information? Because it seems really weird to release something like this that does have kind of real world impact in a degree, maybe not immediate, but it has relevancy. It's not abstract, but is this information actionable? It's clearly going to be different in the finalized version. Why do this? I don't know. Whatever. I got to add that to my little ballet dance here. But my worldview and what I want to impress upon people for how I consider these things and how I, there's probably better ways to think about them. I would recommend this one, obviously, because it's how I look at this, but I am open to suggestions. The palate cleanser, as weird as it is to say, is about emergent properties of complex systems, irrationality, and holding paradoxes as a mental framework. Super light. I know. To start, I wanted to revisit my favorite timeline of radiation oncology to help understand where I'm coming from. Because a common refrain, even title of articles and whatnot, is the sky is always falling in radiation oncology. So there's the zeitgeist, there's the sentiment, and then there's what's happening in actual physical reality with canaries or however else you want to phrase it. And to recap, starting in 1986, maybe before, but the first publication I know about was 1986's The Manpower Crisis in Radiation Oncology by Daniel Flynn. Then over the next 14 years, there was a lot of hand-wringing, but eventual contraction as programs decreased to the lowest they've been in the modern era of less than 100 residents per spot. It was something in the upper 80s, low 90s. I don't remember off the top of my head. And so just as that reached the culmination, IMRT came on the scene. IMRT was the lottery ticket equivalent of radiation oncology. And just like any responsible lottery winners, we bought 5 mansions in the Hollywood Hills. And then the issues caused by buying 5 mansions in the Hollywood Hills are what we're living with right now. The point being, and why this is important, is that there was a reason that they were contracting in the 90s. They were worried that there were too many radiation oncologists for the demand for radiotherapy. Then from early 2000s to 2013 or so, it completely reversed and they doubled the spots. You have to ask yourself why, because I'm here to talk about complex systems. There is an element of simplicity of supply and demand. If you're going to increase supply that level, if you're going to double it, what's your reason? Were there more patients? No. Were there more indications for radiation? No. Were there more fractions needed for the existing treatments? No. Was there a push for hypofrac and omission? Yes. That doesn't make any sense. So the only reason, or the only way that you can justify that level of expansion would be if there was increased money coming in for the existing things that you were doing, which is what happened. And that, again, it was a lottery ticket because that was not designed, or at least I don't believe it was designed. I'm not that level of conspiracy theorist. Maybe it was, but I highly doubt it. That was the math. And it's easy for me to say this now here in 2023 because I have the hindsight of history to review. I doubt it was obvious then. And just like the problems or things that are going on now, it's going to be hard to predict their outcomes. Again, complex systems. So when people get upset about talking about workforce or oversupply or whatnot, and say things like the sky is always falling in radiation oncology, you have to look at objective things that happened versus opinions about things that have happened or are happening. The opinion of sky is always falling in radiation oncology, there was concerns about oversupply in the 90s that led to contraction, which then because of IMRT, there was an expansion, which led the people who lived through that time and who talk about that time to have a worldview of such that the oversupply concerns of the 90s were unfounded. It is really hard to break out of that. So even though the data is, again, the data was clear then, the data is clear now, the difference was IMRT, but it's very hard to take a step back and realize that, because when you talk to a 65-year-old chair who is running a fairly successful department and you say, I think we're training too many rad oncs, they're going to remember when they were residents in early career, and they remember that they heard this before and it didn't come true. And they look at their bottom line and it's not zero, tell you that. And they're going to think you're crazy. And this is the difference between climate and weather. And that's reasonable. We're all human. And so the point is just to always reframe this as the concerns about oversupply have been ever present, but the actions of contraction in the 90s, IMRT in 2002-ish, the doubling of residency expansion, and then the second crash, or wasn't even the first crash, so the unintentional contraction of 2019, because that's what the data is. People are framing this as there's no reason, medical students, to not be interested in rad-onc. Look at these crazy people. They were crazy before, they're crazy now. The problem with that is medical students are not dumb people. So if that argument were true, if people like me were insane, it'd be pretty easy to disprove my argument with data, and you can't. And so what changed? In 2013, we had Dr. Shah's bloodbath article. Again, that's a real title. That's what I'm going to call it. We all know what I'm talking about. So that was after the doubling of residency spots of the expansion. And Dr. Shah appropriately said, oh, whoa, what are we doing? Is this a good idea? Where is the demand for this coming from to justify this level of supply? The reaction to him was swift and violent in academic political violence, not real violence, of course, because let's be honest, we're radiation oncologists. So then if anything, the competitiveness of radiation oncology continued to increase. That's the thing. So the data was there, or at least the hypothesis was there. The data to support that hypothesis was beginning to come out, and it did nothing. So SDN, by this point, that was when kind of the SDN negativity started to. If you look at 2013, the crash didn't happen until 2019. So we had 6 years where the data was ignored. The data was there. The data has always been there. But why was it ignored? I knew about it. So that was when I was trying to decide what I wanted to do with my career. I was concerned about the job market in Radonc. I was told the sky is always falling. I was told that it wasn't true. And I believed that the people who told me that knew what they were talking about because they had been doing it longer than me, and they must know something that I don't. We had the 2013 bloodbath article. Then in 2016, so in 2012, there was the predicted undersupply, which also fueled this. So 2012 was a big year in terms of the NEJM SGR thing about Radonc over budget, and then also the undersupply by Ben Smith and friends. And then in 2016, Ben Smith and friends revised that and said, we were wrong. There's probably going to be at least a 5% oversupply. And that kind of largely, it was weirdly not as noted because it didn't fit the narrative. But still, the competitiveness did not crash. And it wasn't until the 2018 ABR debacle where, and it wasn't even necessarily the debacle itself, it was the response to the debacle. Because, and now this is pure conjecture on my part, I can only speak for myself, but I think from knowing how this works and my friends and myself, and I think all of us prior to that, as the data started to mass, we said to ourselves, I see this data, but the people in charge are telling me not to worry, that the people in charge are telling me that it's going to be fine, and the people in charge must know what they're talking about. There must be a plan. There must be something I'm not seeing because I don't have the experience or knowledge to see it. And then when the 2018 debacle, the huge exam failures happened, and we looked to them and said, what is this? Help us. Their response was so poor, and to the point of saying that the most competitive elite classes in RANOC history, in med school history, because this is like top 1% by classic Western academic standards, kids matching, we were told that we were the dumb ones, like literally. That's what they put in paper. They wrote that and published it. That will go down as the worst move in RADONC. I don't want to be dramatic and say medicine leadership history. I'm sure there's much worse things that could have happened, but the response to the ABR debacle was the emperor has no clothes. And once they did that, and people who had experienced real world issues with the system, the people who willingly turned away, looked away from the data, assuming there was a greater plan at work, realized there was not a greater plan at work. So it was probably a blessing in disguise, but that's why you see the change from 2018 to 2019. The data was there. It wasn't SDN. It wasn't Twitter, now X. It was over 6 years of data that we trusted we could ignore, or wasn't as bad as it seemed, or wasn't what it seemed, because the people in charge told us it wasn't. And then the grave miscalculation, just unbelievable ham-fistedness of the ABR debacle is what changed. We're going to pivot now into complex systems. To help me out and to bring us back into a lighter tone, I'm going to slice in some, there's this YouTube channel. It's literally called Benjamin. I don't know what this is. I like it. It's mostly about stocks and finances, and it's written or performed satirically. I've edited out, obviously, and for copyright purposes, I've edited out a lot of this. But if you guys remember the Wall Street Bets GameStop fiasco from a couple of years ago, which was very funny to live through, I liked it very much, where a bunch of regular people with commercial or retail trading apps messed around with the stock market, and how was that allowed to happen? How did it occur? Could it happen again? That's what this episode is about. I'll link it in the show description, but I think it's a good way to tie this all together, talk about the residency data that just came out, to have a palate cleanser from some of the heavy stuff from before, even though I know the intro is a bit heavy, but, and to explain why I am not sad and you should not be either.
Imagine an ant colony. There are a bunch of individual ants, each doing work to help support the colony. Each individual ant seems to be making decisions about what it should be working on. Those decisions aren't complicated in themselves. After all, an individual ant can only do so many things. However, it isn't until you take a step back that you notice something even more interesting about the ant colony. The colony itself is alive. It has properties that can't be explained by the decisions of the individual ants. If an ant colony is full of individual ants making their own independent decisions, how is it organizing itself into a predictable and coordinated system?
And so the theory of complex systems and emergent properties of complex systems and chaos theory and those sorts of things, this I have found very useful in the way to describe how I view meta radiation oncology. This is not how I approached it from, so I have my opinions and observations and thoughts about what's going on in radiation oncology, and then I came across these things after. They existed, complex system theories from the 80s, but so they've existed in a different world. I was not aware of them, and as I found them, because I just randomly watch and read things until my eyes bleed, I thought, wow, this really is a great way to frame my own opinions. I'm going to steal them from smarter people. And so there's a few things, and I'll have the slides linked up. I'm going to try to start putting things on the Cold Light website. It'll be in the description on the Spotify. But there's a paper about actor-based change framework, which is not about medicine, but it's a good way to view all these things or to think about how we should not be relying on linear solution for complex issues. And specifically, what do I mean by that? So linear thought, linear solutions in Radonc, we all recognize the maldistribution of radiation oncologists, right? There's a problem with staffing rural centers, whereas we don't have the same problem in urban centers. We have the opposite of that problem. And you saw in the Now Censored Workforce panel, and you've seen it time and time again, that we have a shortage of rural radiation oncologists. Therefore, we just need to make more radiation oncologists. That is a linear thought where the problem is a shortage in one particular area. The solution is a general increase in supply in the training pipeline. And the connection is that by the transitive properties of the universe, by osmosis, we'll fill those spots because they'll be Radoncs. It's not technically wrong, but it's awfully cruel where you're essentially taking that one step further. You need to have to have somebody like me. So I am in rural Vermont, which is not as rural as like Nebraska, but I'm the only linear accelerator for an hour in any direction. And I'm here for many reasons, but one is which that I'm from next door. I'm from New Hampshire. I'm from about an hour and a half, 2 hour drive from here. I'm the only Radonc I know about from Keene, New Hampshire. I'm here because I want to be here. And if I wasn't here, this is a tough job and you have to have some very unique sort of skills and desires and things to stake it out. What the linear thought of a maldistribution solution of just increase the number means that you're banking on making the rest of the job market so tight that somebody has no choice but to take this job. If I didn't exist, or and there's other rural places, then that's what that solution says. It's not, we want to find people who fit that role. It's we're going to make the pain so great that role has to be filled. And we do this everywhere always. And it doesn't work so well usually. And let's hear from Benjamin.
Starting in 1870, wolves in Yellowstone National Park were hunted by park employees in an attempt to eradicate all predators from the park. The idea being that by removing the top predators, the ecosystem as a whole should thrive. By 1926, the last wolf pack of Yellowstone had been killed. Fast forward to Yellowstone in 1995. Deer everywhere. Deer around every corner. Deer destroying the vegetation. The U.S. government realized that in order to control the deer population, the proper course of action would be to release more wolves into the park. Wolves, being the natural predators of the deer, would help regulate the population and thus rebalance the ecosystem. So in 1995, 14 wolves were released into Yellowstone. However, over time, something really interesting started to happen. As the wolf population grew, deer started to avoid certain areas of the park. The riverbanks and valleys that had been destroyed by overgrazing deer began to regenerate. Beavers came back to the rivers. There was an explosion of mice, hawks, foxes, and bears. One tiny adjustment in the system's conditions caused a profound change. However, something even more remarkable happened. As trees regenerated along the riverbanks, their roots stabilized the soil, protecting against erosion, narrowing the channels, and in some cases, quite literally changing the path of the river.
Part of why I pivoted this episode from being exclusively about complex systems and about current match data was the artist formerly known as Twitter, now X, where I have been directly tagging and trying to communicate with Astro about things like Rocker for many months now and have heard nothing. And obviously, with the leadership change over at X, the algorithm changed, people have been using it less, so I assumed a lot of them had gone, and then occasionally they'll just pop up or retweet something, or immediately, I know they're reading stuff, but they're radio silent when I try to talk to them. And after the prelim match data came out, prelim application data came out, a PGY5 posted a tweet about preliminary match data just dropped, excited to see a rising trend in number of Radonc applicants after nearly 5 years, driven by increase in both USMDs and IMGs. Time to see how high the crest can go after a 5-year trough. And he tagged Astro and Arrow. And this popped up for me because Astro Chair Jeff reposted this, and that is not his main Twitter account and is a relatively unused Twitter account. And while most people like to say in their bios, don't consider retweets or likes as endorsements. That's what this is. His doesn't say that. But if you are in a position of leadership at the primary professional society of a medical specialty and you barely use this account and you retweet this one thing after a period of silence, you're endorsing this, right? And that's pretty wild because the data is not what you think it is. But this is a perfect example of linear thought in a complex system. The known problem is the decrease in interest and competitiveness in radiation oncology residency. He's not proposing the solution here, but the conclusion drawn is a version of a solution, which is that there's a decrease in interest and we see the biggest number we've seen in 5 years. Therefore, this is a good thing. Therefore, we should celebrate this. Therefore, we should focus on this. And I know that's what's going to happen invariably. And that's not this, that number in isolation means nothing. And that's why, again, what is the point of this prelim data? I don't quite understand what the NRMP is doing, but obviously it's not, they're doing, if they do have a reason, it's not something like this, but whatever. What is the problem with complex systems or trying to make predictions? Because that's really what we're trying to do here. So the Workforce Task Force publication from March was trying to model out 10 years from now, because they do recognize now that there are concerns about oversupply. And their solution was to take data and create an economic model and try to predict what's going to happen. The problem is the world is so complex now that if you're trying to predict more than 6 months in the future, you're going to have a bad time, let alone 10 years. And I was actually asked this in an interview that may or may not come out. What do I think is going to be Radonc in 10 years? I don't know, because if you look back just since 1998, if you had asked me that question in 1998, I wouldn't have known about IMRT. My prediction would have been wrong. What I thought was going to happen in 2018, 2019, I didn't know about the pandemic. My prediction would have been wrong. I don't make these predictions anymore. All of this stuff, I'm seeing what is happening now. I am guessing what would happen if nothing changes. I know something is going to change. There's going to be black swan events. I don't know what those are by literal definition, but I can't bank on those. I'm not going to bank on the random chance of the unknown helping me or us. And so the only thing we or anyone can do is make decisions, actions based on the available data and environment we have now and make short-term predictions. And this is very similar to the stock market and with GameStop and why the GameStop event could not have been predicted, but why most of the time, the way stock trading, the way that whole thing works, it's why they hire a whole bunch of physicists. Well, you get a whole bunch of physics PhDs at Goldman Sachs. And let's explore this a little bit more.
You're making a prediction based on a prediction, based on an assumption, so you can even change up the word if you want. But with each prediction you make, you're becoming more and more uncertain. Is it starting to make sense why economic theory doesn't actually work to predict anything? Think about the most basic economic model of the stock market. Every independent degenerate has only one goal: to make as much money as possible. But this is where the paradox arises. You can only buy a stock if someone is selling, a counterparty, probably an institution. Let's use Microsoft as an example. What is actually causing this to go up and down, theoretically? There's some institutions, some funds, and some poor people. They all have the same goal. Breaking news, Bill Gates is getting divorced. Let's just pretend that he's still the CEO because it's funny. The institutions see this. They look at their models, talk to some insiders, then there's you. You're fairly certain the market hasn't priced this in yet. After all, the news just came out a few hours ago. So what is actually moving this price? People with different levels of information, different bias, different risk tolerance. We're trained to think in a very linear fashion.
And that's the point of this podcast and my other activities, is that the severe information asymmetry that exists at baseline in medicine, in anything, actually, in all of life, is a problem. And in Radonc, a lot of our issues and why we feel and seem so different than other things in medicine is because we are the smallest field in medicine, or one of the smallest. And all of these things, nothing about Radonc to a degree is unique. It's just that everything is magnified because there's less of a bell curve to balance out all of our issues. And so that's why it seems more extreme, because it is in a sense, but it's not unique. It's just small. And there are people working with different amounts of information. And that's, again, what prompted this episode in part, is that I know there are, especially residents can have a hard time with what I'm saying and will want to tune me out or this kind of logic out about oversupply. And it's because we have different levels of information and experience, and this is all an attempt at me to equalize things, but it's hard and it means that there's some uncomfortable truths. But if you follow the, so I went to go track down the prelim data to see the Excel files for myself, and the NRMP on that page has a lot of other match data. So I pulled the 2018 to 2022 final data. So this is helpful because this captures, I wish it went back, just look back, captured a little bit more. But so 2018 was the last year before the collapse, and then 2019 and subsequent was the crash. And so if you look at 2018 to 2022 and you look at the overview, so for the number of applicants from 2018 to 2022, we have a total number of 496. This is to Radiation Oncology, by the way. You have 496 total applicants in 2018. You have 639 in 2022. It's actually not the highest. So weirdly, talking about trials and stuff, was 2021 and there were 763. But so it fell more than 100 between 2021 and 2022. We'll get to that. But so then if you look just at IMGs, you have international medical graduates. You go from 130 in 2018 to 231 in 2022. The total increase of RadOnc applicants, this is the final data, is in this look back is about 140. Of that 140, 100 of that is international medical graduates. Then you look at the average number of applications per applicant. Total, you have 30.2 average applications per applicant down to 19.4 in 2022. That is in aggregate. However, if you look at IMGs, the average number of applications per applicant goes from 7.8 in 2018 to 17 in 2022. That's a huge increase. And then I always have an issue whenever we all talk about this, people get all up in arms. I hate classic Western academic measures of intelligence or all of this. I don't think any of this makes you a good doctor. I think there's many other things. And I am only bringing this up because we're comparing apples and apples here. And I think we can all agree that in American medical school applications, residency, whatnot, that there are a certain set of parameters that institutions use to define what makes a quote unquote good applicant. And I do not personally believe that translates into being a good doctor. And so please don't mistake me on this. The NRMP stratifies by AOA status. So for those who don't know, AOA Alpha Omega Alpha is the Medical Honor Society, and it is considered the premier Medical Honor Society. So they stratify this. So in terms of RadOnc applications stratified by AOA status, in 2018, there were 82 applicants that were members of AOA. In 2022, that was down to 30. That's more than a 50% drop. In terms of the average number of applications per AOA applicant, it was 56 in 2018, down to 28.7 in 2022. It was a 50% drop. They don't stratify that out further, but I think this tells you, you get a sense. And again, this is 2018 to 2022. And so let's continue on with Benjamin here. This next clip does start up with something that I feel is incorrect. Well, I like his analysis because I am using it here. And this next opening line of science and math behave in a linear fashion. He's incorrect, kind of my whole point of this, but he doesn't know that because he's a finance guy. So I would make a slight correction and just say that everything is a complex system, but to be continued.
Science, math, and other useless things behave in this way. Stonk market doesn't behave this way. It follows completely different rules. A perfect understanding of the individual parts doesn't automatically convey a perfect understanding of the whole system's behavior. It's not linear. Each one has a narrowly defined set of tasks for itself. I'm going to pick up this piece of sand. I'm going to go stack it on top of that giant mound. That's my life. However, at the system level, we can see how through all of those interactions, something much more complex emerges. An adaptive and organized system. Through thousands of individual tasks playing out over and over again, unpredictable properties arise. Emergence. Individuals within the system are constantly drawing from their environment and trying to understand their environment. Let's say you have a system that allows you to consistently predict stock market corrections. You might be able to predict the unpredictable, but by predicting the unpredictable, the predictable just became predictably unpredictable. We're back at square one again.
Trying to predict what's going to happen with supply and demand in radiation oncology is the same as trying to retrospectively understand why the specialty collapsed when it did in terms of match competitiveness. Everything was there already. All the data was there. I personally think it was the response to the ABR debacle. It's multifactorial. That was one thing, and it's a very linear sort of thought on my aspect. I think that was maybe the proverbial straw that broke the camel's back, but it wasn't the only thing. And trying to read the tea leaves on match data is a similar sort of, it's not definitely totally tilting at windmills, but it approaches it. So now getting into the preliminary data here, you can see that looking at 2019 to 2024, and interestingly, and again, why I don't understand this data, they evidently wait and release it as of October 5th. So that means that the 2021 data is blank in a lot of places because applications that year with the pandemic opened in October 21st. So rather than shift it, I get it, like, because then you're off if historically you've always done October 5th and whatever. This data is so weird. But anyway, so there's a 4,701 increase in total applications submitted from 2019 to 2024. So this is everywhere. And because it goes from the 44,242 in 2019 to 48,948 in 2024. So right there, when we're talking about, oh, are we celebrating that there's 255 preliminary applicants in radiation oncology. So first, there's 4,701 more people applying this year than 5 years ago. Of that 4,701, 1,823 more DO applicants, 2,059 more IMG applicants, and only 819 more USMD applicants. Of this close to 5,000 increase over the past 5 years, only 800-ish are USMDs. Most of this comes from more DO and IMG. And that makes sense, right? Because USMD schools are very regulated. That's a bottleneck, and you need approval and so on and so forth. In terms of supply and demand, if your number is increasing, it's got to come from somewhere, and it's not coming from the bottleneck that is regulated USMD schools. It's coming from the pool of DO applicants that might not have been applying to historically allopathic programs before, and IMGs, because there's a whole world out there, so there's just more. So item one, considering this five-year high in RADONC, it is coming in the setting of 5,000 more applications overall than it used to be.
We're very used to this idea that things should have a clear and predictable cause and effect. Understanding cause and effect is critical in controlling the world around you. It's how we've built civilization. Unfortunately, this isn't the case with the stonk market. The non-linear nature of the market suggests that large-scale changes can come from tiny inputs, and it's impossible to trace those large-scale changes back to their initial cause.
The preliminary data is nowhere near as detailed as the final data. And again, all you guys can go get this Excel file and all this stuff for yourself, but I don't want to make this episode another 100-hour episode, so I won't read out things line by line. But the tweet was about the 255 total number of applications being the highest in 5 years, which is true. The last time it was 217 in 2019 and 220 in 2023, but it is true that it is the highest. That comes from a 3x, three-time increase in the number of DO and IMG applications from 2019 to today. So it's very interesting that, well, yes, there has been an increase in USMD applications as well. What we're seeing here is mostly due to a massive increase in DO and IMG applicants. And it's important to realize, and this is where this always gets messed up, is that I'm not making a value judgment on these subcategories here. I don't care. I don't think any of this has an implication about who is or is not going to be a good doctor or a good radiation oncologist, and I'll get to that. But the point being that to just singularly say, huzzah, look, we have 255 prelim applicants, this is the best we've had, is myopic to say the least. And it would behoove Astro leadership to not be retweeting these things as a tacit endorsement and to actually explore what this data means. So in terms of total number of applicants, this 255, this is born out of the fact that there are three times more DO and IMG applications now compared to 2019. You can look at the average number of applications submitted, which is actually the most interesting. So the overall, the DO, IMG, MD, for the past 3 years, we've been locked in a steady state at about 38.5 applications submitted per applicant. But behind the scenes, that trend, it comes from a almost 50% drop in average applications submitted from 59 to 35 for USMDs, and a increase of 30 to 44 and 37 to 44 for IMG and DO respectively. So the chances of that is an interesting phenomenon to note. If I had to guess, this might be our number, but we'll see. I don't know. I could be wrong. The average applications received per program is down from 133 to 116, 2019 to 2024. However, the majority of that is due to a 50% drop in USMD applicants. So they went from 120 applications received per program at this point in time by MD applicants to 63, like literally 50%. And you see a 4x, four-time increase in DO and IMG. What I'm really interested in, and this is not in the prelim data, this has to come out of the final stuff, is the cross-specialty applications. So who is applying to more than one? Because if you are truly committed to a specialty, you're not going to be applying to more than one unless you are worried you're not going to make it into that specialty or whatnot. And we'll have to wait till all is said and done. But if you look at RADONC cross applicants, it's actually more than I thought. It's very interesting. And Brian Carmody, the chair of Sodium, talks about this stuff at length for other reasons. But the trend that you observe for people applying to RADONC in terms of all comers is very similar. There's nothing really tremendously notable. I made a line graph about it from 2019 to 2023. Really, there seems to be more dual applicants or cross applicants in RADONC and EM in last year and in Nuke Med. Those are the only ones that kind of really break the curve, but even then, not significantly. And the most interesting one is to look specifically at IMG, and which is really the point of how I read this data and what I think we're seeing here. So if you look at the cross specialty application, again, this is not for the 2024 prelim. This is only from 2019 to 2023. You see a huge number of IMGs applying to multiple specialties with RUNC as the primary one. And my hypothesis would be that the significant rise in application number we're seeing and the severe exaggeration of the cross applicant line pattern, which you have to graph it all out, but and the lack of any notable change in radiotherapy itself, meaning there's no new novel treatment or technology, there's no improvement in reimbursement or salary or any of that. So what is the change? I would argue that it means that radiation oncology is viewed as one of the gateway paths now into the U.S. medical system. And that is a result of the United States' general refusal to recognize the training and certification from foreign nations, which is a whole other thing. But for those who don't know, which I guess if you're listening to this and you're not in medicine, if you train as a surgeon in a country in Eastern Europe and you want to come to America, they are generally not going to recognize your training and experience, meaning that you could have completed the equivalent of surgical residency and be board certified in that Eastern European nation. But if you come here, we're going to say no. And so if you want to work as a doctor, you're going to need to do residency over again. Like you're essentially, they will recognize usually that you have a medical degree, but they're going to treat you as basically fresh out of med school. And it's crazy. And so as a consequence or as a result of that, you have people who immigrate here who were doctors in their home country who have to find a way to just get into the system here. It's pretty messed up, but that's why you'll see, and you might have seen this in your own med schools or heard stories about it, where I was a cardiologist in my home country, and now I have to do this thing I was never interested in before because the United States says I have to. But anyway, I think that's what's happening here. I think if you look at the huge increase in this line is really impressive. And my point about this is, what does this have to do with complex systems? And I put in a little picture of the George Bush mission accomplished thing from the naval, the infamous. If we're going to look at this 255 number and we're going to say, we're back, baby, we're back, you really want to think long and hard about that. And if you disagree with my opinions in general, when I am highly critical of leadership positions or leadership organizations so a lot of that is born from my own experience where I ignored data that I knew existed when I was a student because the people in charge told me I could and I trusted them.
You're saying there's no hope, right? The market is a complex adaptive system with no cause and effect, but simultaneously somehow incredibly efficient with quants from Wall Street and space pricing in every individual photon hitting the Earth and how those photons translate to local weather patterns correlating to fluctuations in the wheat futures market. You think NASA wants to go to space? Goldman Sachs has bases on the moon where senior analysts are pricing in each lunar asteroid impact and how the moon's additional mass affects the tidal forces altering salmon migration so they can efficiently price the Atlantic salmon futures market.
I am absolutely not saying there is no hope. If I thought there is no hope, I wouldn't be doing any of this. You would never hear from me. I think there's plenty to be hopeful. I also don't really care about who is coming from what background in terms of becoming a radiation oncologist. I only care about people who want to be here. But in terms of people's reaction to my content, I would encourage people to reflect upon the housing crisis of 2008 and why that occurred. And so this is an excerpt from a different piece of content that I'll link to.
Work that was done right after the recession by Cornell University shows from 2003 to 2008. The economy became networked to fail. We had banks who were making risky bets, but also lending money to almost every sector of the economy. And so one small speculative bubble and one economy then escalated to the rest of the world. And the fallout on it has been traumatic. It's been traumatic not just for institutions, but for people. This sort of chaos reaction to things that are uncertain is where the real damage in our economy, but also in our lives, occurs. Yogi Berra says it best, which is, it's déjà vu all over again, because in 2011, a European complexity science conglomerate actually started to map the economy again to say, what lessons have we learned from 2008? And what they actually found is, there's a supercluster of 147 organizations in the world that now control 40% of the world's wealth. And what that means is that we have not learned those lessons. We are still too networked to fail, and we aren't thinking about the degrees of connectedness in the world. And so it's not just on regulators, not just on our government, it's not just on our institutions. Individuals first have to make this change. We have to learn to embrace complex systems, and we also have to learn to disregard overly simplistic solutions. We have to question the borders of problems and solutions. When we're told that problems are very simple, or we're told that solutions can be single-minded, we should challenge that. And not just borders in terms of geography, but borders in terms of time.
My version of concern over the sky is always falling in radiation oncology is that we can't repeat the same mistakes. There's many things that we can do that are failures or bad attempts or anything. The only thing that we should strive with everything we can to avoid is repeating mistakes. And if your reaction to concerns over supply and demand in the radiation oncology job market is the sky is always falling in radiation oncology, that would be similar to seeing what happened in the 2008 financial crisis and making tranches again. How we got into this mess in the first place was the fact that there was a singular acceptable narrative. And you look again at the bloodbath article 2013. In 2013, the data was pointed out and it was swiftly responded to and shut down. And you didn't hear anything about it again for six more years, at least in open. Obviously, it never went anywhere. It was talked about on SDN. But the RADONC cultural narrative for 6 years was that is incorrect. You are wrong. And this is what's going to happen to you if you speak up about it. Don't try it. And when you have a monopoly of opinion is where you get into trouble. When you have overly linear and simplistic solutions to the problems we all see and know, that is where you get into trouble.
But I'm happy to tell you that there is a solution. It's not incredible. First, diversity of opinion means efficiency in a public exchange. I'm saying public exchange instead of stock market because you can really apply this to anything. When people are challenging each other's ideas, there's less room for inefficiency to rise. This makes sense when you really think about it. Degenerate A and B both think they're right and want to prove one another wrong. It's egotistical, fueled by testosterone, Adderall, and greed, the things that make the world go round. Now think about thousands of people all trying to do this at the same time. Even though each individual may not have perfect knowledge, they're constantly reevaluating their position, adjusting based on other arguments, and adapting to the most relevant information. What does that lead to? Incredibly efficient, well-priced stocks that offer little opportunity to you and I. However, knowing this tells us something interesting about where opportunity does exist. If diverse opinions create efficient markets, what might create an inefficient market? Example A, the housing market will never go down. It's rock solid, invincible. People who all share one opinion tend to introduce all kinds of bias into their thinking. Who could have predicted how the GameStop play would unfold? Absolutely no one. It's a perfect example of small inputs leading to chaotic system-level changes. It's non-linear. So maybe there is hope for us. Probably not, but maybe. Will any of this abstract theory help to predict anything in real life? I wouldn't count on it.
I've been asked before, and will likely be asked again many times, I assume, why am I doing this? What is my plan here? And it's that. It's basically that the hegemony of opinion that occurred in radiation oncology in America for close to 20 years is what led us down an unfortunate path. And the only way I can see that we get out of this mess that we find ourselves in is to count on emergent properties of a complex system, meaning I hope that when people hear this podcast or read my posts or my letters to the editor or any of that, my main and almost sole intent is to, I don't want to say influence, but influence independent actors. I am banking that my colleagues and the people around my colleagues, meaning the radiation colleges themselves and everyone around them, are smart or at least have self-interests. And that I cannot predict what's going to happen more than, well, I can't really predict the future at all, but I don't know what's going to happen. But I know that there's a lot of complex and interrelated systems that are going to try to act in their own best interest and try to predict what someone else is going to do in their own best interest and so on and so forth. And I am trying to make sure that there is no longer a single narrative that is acceptable. That's why I'm not on SDN. Or any other anonymous account with this is my own name, this is my own voice, this is my own person. And I just want people to think about things in more than one way. And I could be totally wrong. We'll see. But if I'm totally wrong, well, then that's why there's other opinions than mine. So this all works. And that is why I hold what some would consider the irrational belief, paradoxical belief, that I am hypercritical of current leadership or organizational systems in radiation oncology, yet I am deeply optimistic. And what does that even mean?
When we judge or criticize some action as irrational, it does not necessarily mean that this action is unintelligible or paradoxical in its own nature. We can be perfectly aware of the normative standard of our criticism and know, or be able to conceive, the reason why such an action took place. For instance, we can understand why someone failed to quit smoking despite his resolution and still think that he is irrational for doing or undoing it. We need not know the exact details of its underlying causal mechanism to make the criticism. Our judgment of irrationality could be a simple matter of normative position we adopt towards certain behaviors which we believe could be corrected through personal endeavor. Irrationality does not seem to have a necessary connection with being paradoxical, at least in our normal use of everyday language.
I'm quoting now from a philosophical piece on rational belief, and because it goes along great with my whole theme here, in that when I talk to folks, people frame how they view this whole system argument, whatever you want to call it, in a certain way and functioning in a certain nature. And it hasn't always been that way, and it won't always be this way. And just you might find my belief that I can be very critical and optimistic, irrational. I might also say that I find expanding residency 2x in 10 years for no reason other than money also irrational, but I get it. I get why it happened. And I've talked to many people, many chairs and things, and asked them that question. And it makes sense on a local level, because when we talk about these things like supply and demand, we always frame it in terms of the national level and usually using claims data. And that's not just how it is. Like on a local level, where this matters is an individual institution is making decisions for themselves. So when a program, an individual chair or department makes the decision to have more residents, they're looking at their own data. They're saying, these are the number of people coming into our department. This is the revenue generated for the costs. And therefore, it makes sense for us to add a resident. Never once in that calculus is it, what is this going to do to society as a whole? A tragedy of the commons, like that just is how it is. And that's what we're up against. It's a complex system. And saying we fix maldistribution by increasing residents, or saying that the way we fix this is by contraction, is also, none of that is actually going to work in isolation. And that is the whole point of at least what I'm doing and hopefully what others.
Davidson names the following view the Plato principle. No intentional action can be internally irrational, in the Socratic sense that no one willingly acts counter to what he knows to be best. This principle is controversial and even paradoxical in the face of so many apparently erratic acts in our daily life. But if we limit the action in the Plato principle to theoretical acts or reasoning only, it will not be controversial at all. This may mean that the proper domain for something like, or in the spirit of, the Plato principle is a theoretical or cognitive one. It would be too strong or unrealistic to sanction such a principle in practical domain that characteristically involves various cognitive and volitional factors. It is interesting to notice that the above expression of the Plato principle sounds like it is a pure description of a natural fact, i.e., everybody by nature acts, reasons, intentionally, according to what he knows to be best, closest to truth. But this is plainly wrong. Even within the domain of pure cognition, people could freely and consciously deviate from what he knows to be best if there were no learnt norms governing reasoning process. The reason why we almost never see people intentionally violate the logic rules in their reasoning, if they ever understand them, is not because logic is ingrained in our brain, but rather because we were brought up in such a natural and social environment in which both the collective human praxis and individual activities cannot go very far without certain fundamental epistemic norms.
When we think about everything in aggregate, and especially with the competitiveness and interest in the radiation oncology match, that at the end of the day, the only things that matter are, one, the radiation medicine practiced on the people who trust us with their lives should be excellent. Two, the doctors choosing to dedicate their careers to radiation medicine are doing so because they actually want to. And three, the doctors choosing to dedicate their professional and personal lives to radiation medicine have reasonable, stable careers that are worth the investment it costs to become a board-certified, independently practicing radiation oncologist. What the numbers are, in many ways, don't matter. I hope next year there's 500 preliminary applicants. It's not going to change anything. I only care about the SOAP data that was talked about in the now-censored workforce panel, and that's the only thing you should care about, too. But beyond that, each person or persons, entities who hear these criticisms should be independent, competing, and collaborating agents. And that's the only way that we're actually going to get out of this mess, and not a singular linear solution by itself is going to do it.
And if my words have failed me, then I'll leave you with M. Scott Peck. Abandon the urge to simplify everything and begin to think multidimensionally, to glory in the mystery and paradoxes of life. Not to be dismayed by the multitude of causes and consequences that are inherent in each experience, but to appreciate that life is complex.
This has been a Photon Media production. Don't forget to like and subscribe on whatever platform you use to listen to us. Be well and beam on.